and use. Perkins will be responsible for printing approximately 3,000 print copies in a coil binding format. The title page will feature Perkins, NLS, and ICEB. A new foreword and an acknowledgments page are still to be written. The project is scheduled to be completed by the end of 2012.
Any questions for Judy about World Braille usage? Okay, thank you, Judy. There is a question. Nigeria has a question about World Braille usage. Go for it.
Yes, please. I have raised it before that I hope that the Braille usage for each of the additional Braille symbols to the regular alphabet, unique, because there is often discrepancy on what represents these extra symbols, if I can call them that way. And I think it's only through the Unicode values that we can actually be sure of using the correct one.
Jane, will you be able to help us assist in getting that information together?
Yes.
Okay. Then we would be happy to.
But I will need, I have a copy of the old usage. I will need a copy of the codes that are being included in order to find it.
We're going to include every code for which we can get information.
Yeah, okay.
Fine, and I believe that Mike Townsend from the UK has a question.
Yes, it's Mike Townsend, UK. How can we assist you with this project? It's probably similar to what Jean has been asking, actually, to know what codes you've already got. I want to know which ones you might not have, because if I put another hat on as Torch Trust, we're in touch with many, many countries have assisted their code development and use of their codes, and we would like to help support the project.
I do have a list of codes for which we are seeking information, and I'd be happy to send that to you.
Good. Great, thanks.
Bill Poole is now addressing this issue. Bill?
Yeah, Bill Poole, United Kingdom. There's a question that I'd like to ask, which I know has been discussed in relation to this project in the past. Have you resolved the thorny issue of whether to include any contractions in the coding lists that
yes,
you make?
We will not be including contractions.
You'll not be including, right, that's the answer. Okay.
We will be including references to code books where you can obtain the information. And where those exist electronically, the electronic version of the document will have links to those.
Christo de Klerk.
Thank you, Chair. I want to suggest that the list of codes that you would still need information on be sent to all member countries.
Yes, okay, I can do that. Let me just make one more point,
sure.
Thanks. This is a list of codes of which we are aware. There may be codes of which we are not aware, but we're also happy to include them. Just because something is not on this list does not mean that we're not interested in including it. We want this document to be as inclusive as possible. So if you are aware of codes that are not among the 130 that are currently in the Duxbury Braille Translator and don't appear on the list of codes for which we are seeking information, please let us know.
Jean again?
With reference to Bill's point about contractions, for instance, in quite a lot of codes you've got like CH is considered a single character, but in a way it is a contraction. I assume those are not excluded.
If it's part of the language's alphabet,
yes,
then they are not excluded.
Okay.
If it's a single character and it's part of the alphabet, it will be in there, and as well as accented letters.
Okay, and just to remind us all, we need to speak as closely to the microphone as we can, please. Bill, Paul. No? sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were seeking... Okay, you were agreeing. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Are there any other questions for Judy about World Braille usage? No? All right. Thank you very much, Judy, for that report. Would you now answer the report, please?
Thank you, Mary. I have been fortunate with the support of the National Library Service, my employer, to be ICEB's representative to the World Braille Council. So here is the report of that. In 2008, the World Blind Union adopted a strategic plan for the years 2009 through 2012. One of the strategic priorities, capacity building, included a strategic objective to strengthen the World Braille Council, WBC. The initial phase included inviting members, and ICEB was asked to appoint a representative. Other members included a representative from each of the WBU regions, as well as representatives from a few other major blindness organizations throughout the world. The strategic objective included four initiatives. The four initiatives are listed here along with the action items deemed most relevant to ICEB. Initiative 1, to rebuild and strengthen the World Braille Council. Initiative 2, establish key priorities and action plan for term based on activities listed below. Bullet. Creation of a database on the following existing national and regional Braille authorities and their present activities. E-libraries, international libraries, lending out books. Bullet. Acting as a repository of catalogs of these libraries and making necessary arrangements for the purpose. Bullet. To facilitate establishment of Braille authorities in countries where these do not exist at present, and preparation of suitable modules for the purpose. Bullet. To select and identify useful resource material available in English on different aspects of Braille production and Braille teaching and facilitate translation into major languages in developing countries. Bullet. To strive for uniform Braille notations and symbols for mathematics and computers. Bullet. To promote faster and enhanced production of books in Braille through interaction with WIPO, publishing houses, and by ensuring compatibility of e-text for Braille production for developing countries in particular. Initiative 3, use of Braille. Bullet. To undertake initiatives in conjunction with ICEVI to promote the early instruction of children and adults. Bullet. To promote the use of Braille in public spaces and on consumer products. Bullet. Commission a third edition of World Braille Usage, pending the availability of resources. Initiative 4. To promote the unification of Braille code across all languages. Bullet. To establish a technical subcommittee with technical expertise in languages and Braille. Bullet. To ensure all major language groups are included in subcommittees to be chaired by Mr. Otto Pritz from Norway. Bullet. To advocate with UNESCO to support an international conference to advance the unification of Braille. In this quadrennium, the World Braille Council has held three meetings: November 2009 in Madrid, January 2011 in New Delhi, and October 2011 in Leipzig. A great deal of progress has been made on many of these items. This work has almost all been done by other interested organizations. Most notably, Bullet, a comprehensive bibliography on Braille research was completed. Bullet, A successful international conference on Braille innovation was held in Leipzig, Germany, September 2011. This is the Braille 21 conference that you'll be hearing about in a few minutes. Bullet. A consortium of contributing organizations was formed to support the revision of World Braille usage, and work has begun. Bullet. Knowledge was shared with ICEB on the creation of guidelines for developing a Braille authority. Bullet. Knowledge was shared on the development of user requirements for refreshable Braille. And bullet. Information was gathered and planning begun for the pursuit of further international efforts to promote Braille signage and labeling. The future of the World Braille Council will be determined at the 2012 quadrennial meeting of the World Blind Union to be held in Bangkok, November 2012. End of report.
Thank you very much, Judy. Now, I think, Bill, Paul, you indicated that you wanted to speak on this, so we'll take you first, and then we'll take other questions about Judy's World Braille Council report. Bill?
There are two issues that I want to talk about, and I'll raise them one at a time because you might want to get discussion on each, or you might want to reserve another time for discussion, but here they are. The first is that you mentioned in your report the subject of the future of ICEB, and you mentioned that how ICEB was managed in the future could depend on what kind of association it had with the World Braille. Tell you, and I just don't think I can fudge this. I'm not normally a controversial person, as you know. I have to tell you that having attended the last WBC as an observer in Leipzig last September, I think it was, I have no confidence that, as presently constituted, it is in any way competent to supersede ICEB and the other separate individual language groups like the Francophone group and the Spanish group. It doesn't seem to me that it has thought about what would be involved in this as yet. I mean, they could obviously, these groups can be affiliates to the WBC in some way or other, but it does not seem to me that it would be a good thing if at this time they lost their own separate identities. And I just want to say in relation to that, because I want to say sometime during this meeting, as it's my last meeting, that of all the international organisations I have either been enough associated with to have some idea of what goes on in them, I have not come across one that scores such a high mark in relation to its readiness to subsume national interests under a common good and to work collaboratively among each other in countries which might disagree on a lot of other issues. And I would be very sorry to see this organisation dissolved, therefore.
Bill, I didn't make any reference to the future of ICEB.
Sorry, it was Mary Schnackenberg.
Yes, it was not in the context of the World Braille Council report.
No, that's right. And I do not withdraw at all the fact that I did raise issues about the future of ICEB, because they have been talked about by some. And I thank you for your resounding support of ICEB's work. I agree that national interests have been worked through and consensus has been found. And we're going to hear this week from what has been happening in South Africa, which delivers an absolute object lesson in how you resolve difficulties between language codes. And number one way of resolving difficulties is to get around the table and talk about it, which clearly South Africa has done. So we're going to learn about, they're going to teach us about that tomorrow afternoon, and I'm looking forward to that particular paper. and other conversations we'll have about that this week. So thank you, Bill, for raising that issue. I did signal in my report that we just have to watch and wait and see what the World Braille Council does. And I think that that it would be inappropriate to make any for the report to have made any further comment, judging the pros and cons of what might happen. We just have to wait and see what the World Braille Council does.
Mary, I think what we need to wait and see is what the World Blind Union does. Because the World Braille Council is essentially in suspension at the moment. And the World Blind Union, at its meeting in November, will decide if the World Braille Council is going to be an ongoing committee of the World Blind Union. That will determine the future of the World Braille Council.
So, Mike Townsend, UK. Obviously, what you say is correct. But we need to actually do more, I think, than watch and wait. I think we need to put some input into the World Blind Union about what we think the direction of the World Braille Council should be. And I think that ICB should be an active member seeking to make that direction correct. I'm a bit worried that we keep thinking about codes here. We can all enjoy internationalizing codes, and I'm sure that is actually a vital and important thing to do. However, the promotion of Braille is much more important, and I believe that the WBU in those resolutions that it made in 2008 was considering the actual high profile that is needed for Braille, and we need to be up there with the UN Convention, and we need to support the World Braille Council and help to direct the WBU in this particular aspect of the promotion of Braille and its importance for blind people. We've already been reminded this morning that of the 3% of blind South Africans who are employed, 90% of them use Braille, are Braille users. That is replicated across the world. We've got a strong message to present, and I think if the World Braille Council just concentrates on codes, we'll be not getting our message across. So, should I be elected as the publicity officer, that's one aspect which I will be hoping to raise on not only the ICB agenda, but the world agenda.
Thank you, Mike. I agree with your point, but I think the point about the World Blind Union, the way to approach this would be for each member country of ICEB to approach its World Blind Union representatives to take that message to Bangkok in November.
Pete Osborne? Okay. Judy has made the point, says Pete, so thank you very much, Pete, and Judy and Bill. Bill Poole has his hand up again, so Bill?
Yes, I said I'd take my 2 points separately, and we talked about the issue of whether ICB might get subsumed into the World Braille Council, and I've noted what you've said about that. But Mike strayed into my second point, which is about further code harmonisation. I absolutely agree with him that the most important thing for the World Braille Council to be doing at this time is to be promoting the teaching and use of Braille throughout the world, and there are countries where one feels that people's confidence in the continued use of Braille is waning, and there is therefore it is very important that at this time should be done, and I very much look forward to the contribution he'll make if he's elected as public relations officer for this organisation. Nevertheless, the issue of harmonisation of signs that could be harmonised was raised, and I have to say that I've received the standards document which Otto Pritz's committee has written, mainly in relation to the labelling of pharmaceutical products, and this could apply to the labelling of other products as well. And it is in this context where things are manufactured for distribution over different Braille code areas that raises the issue of whether there should be standardisation, at least for labelling and signage purposes, of certain signs. And again, I have to say that having read this document, I have gained the impression that the committee charged with dealing with it doesn't know how to take it forward, or indeed whether to. If I can just read you something from it, which illustrates this, and it isn't long, so... Right. It isn't long, so I won't waste a lot of your time on it, but they devote a great deal of space to Braille cell configuration and standardising the physical characteristics of Braille, which is important, and the need for Braille not to obscure print and print not to obscure Braille, which is also important, and other things like that. But they do have a small section on Braille character sets, and they say that the set of the country for which the product is destined should be the character set that is used on the labels. And they then go on to say, if multi-market, multilingual packs are being produced with Braille text, the correct character sets should be included and clearly identified in the artwork. Well, the problem is that involves appears to involve separately labelled packages for each of the countries where things may be sold, and things are often sold in countries where they weren't manufactured. That is what one of the drivers towards having a harmonisation of signs. I have no confidence that the committee as at present constituted knows how to proceed with this issue, and I think that it is a matter that should be that should be given consideration when the World Braille Council next does meet. But I don't disagree in any way from Mike's point that promotion of the teaching and use of Braille is important.
Thank you, Bill. Are there any more questions on this matter? We've got someone from the Australian table.
Sorry, I'm just confused as to which microphone I was supposed to be using. Thank you, Judy, for your report. It raises a number of interesting issues. The report contained quite a number of items that I'm not quite sure whether it was that the World Braille Council was interested in or was going to work on. And then, towards the end, identified some issues where some progress had been made. I'm unclear from that, though, from the report as to whether the progress was made by the World Braille Council or whether it's claiming the credit for a number of things. For example, there's reference to knowledge was shared with ICB on the creation of guidelines for developing a Braille authority. It was my understanding that essentially the information was provided by the ICB and shared with the World Braille Council. So I'm just, apart from the conference in Leipzig, I'm a bit unclear on what the World Braille Council has really what its tangible results have been, and I'm unclear as to why the council seems to be in suspension now, when I would have thought that in the lead up to the World Blind Union General Assembly in Thailand in November, it would have been an ideal time to have a fourth meeting and bring the work of the council to some culmination for this term. You mentioned that we should, from each delegation in each country, consult with our World Blind Union delegations in relation to the future of the World Braille Council. My difficulty in that regard is that I don't know whether there has been a proposal developed that is going to be discussed at the World Blind Union General Assembly in November, And I think it would be helpful, and before we talk to our delegations, to have some sense of what might be the ICEB perspective on that. So, yes, I'd like some more clarity about that. And finally, Judy, I wonder if you could just give us a bit more information about the comprehensive bibliography on Braille research that was completed, as to who completed that and where it's available from. Thanks.
Okay. Yes, you're correct that the knowledge about the Braille authorities was ICEB did share knowledge with World Braille Council. The World Braille Council did have some input into that, but essentially it came from ICEB. The bibliography, Diane, is it available online? The bibliography was created primarily by Diane Wormsley, who happens to be in this room.
Judy, yes, this is Diane. The bibliography is actually in a draft form and in final stages of completion. It needs to be constantly updated to keep it current, obviously. It does have a keyword list, and it has an alphabetical listing in Microsoft Word so that people can use the search features of Microsoft Word to use the keywords to search for articles, which is also being updated. And I can, I think in the last ICEBI, the educator, the links were in there, but I can also share them. They're public links to a Dropbox.
Diane, may I ask a question about that, please? The links that I have seen were dated September 29, but you're talking about, or September something, but you're talking about ongoing updates. Are those updates still reflected in that link, even though they've been added since September?
Not yet, Mary.
Okay.
What's the best way for us to share these links with everyone?
Judy, I think we can provide the links through the ICEB executive list and ask our countries to share them with their local members.
That's a good idea. Okay. Diane, if you can send that information to me, I'll take care of sharing it.
I can do that. Thank you.
And Pete Osborne is going to speak to the World Blind Union piece of Bill's comments.
Okay, it's Pete Osborne. I think we need in this conversation to reflect on where the World Braille Council has come from. There have been probably three, if not four, attempts to get the World Braille Council going. And this latest attempt, I think, has been the most successful. But I guess in addition to Braille 21 as a conference, for me, a key success is that we have a World Braille Council, and previous attempts have not been as successful. So it may indeed have many imperfections, and I would agree with many of the observations that have been made. But I think we need to reflect that we at least now do have a World Braille Council at some level. With regard to the position at WBU, the World Braille Council at the moment is just one of many committees that World Blind Union has, which could either be agreed or disbanded, depending on, you know, on how successive terms go. Now, I think there's a general commitment at the moment from the leadership of WBU to keep the World Braille Council very much in focus. But one of the things that has been discussed, and I believe is being proposed, is a constitutional amendment for WBU that would give the World Braille Council some permanency. So I think specifically what we'd be asking countries to do is to, when these amendments become available, which they will in due course, is to focus on those constitutional amendments, particularly the ones pertaining to the World Braille Council, and encourage their adoption.
Thank you, Pete. Any more issues about the World Braille Council report? Bill Poole, I recognise you.
Can I just comment on what Pete has said? I absolutely agree with him that this attempt to form a World Braille Council has been more successful, has progressed further than the attempt, the previous attempts, some of which I was involved with. But you have to know that the reason why previous attempts failed was because of obstruction by the then officers of WBU. Since World Braille Council is a subsidiary of WBU, it means that it's important that the present officers shouldn't take the same line if the council isn't to founder again. And it's obvious, I mean, I agree with Pete, it's obvious that there is work that could properly be given to it. There is a place for a world body to speak on Braille, and I just very much hope that people in this room who are going to be at the WBU meeting will make it clear that this conference regards it as important that the most recent attempt, which has at least got the council off the ground, shouldn't fail in the way that the last ones have, and that the squaring of the constitution of the WBU with the existence of the WBC is not rocket science and could be done quite easily if people had the will to do it.
Yes, thank you, Bill. The World Braille Council, I think its first iteration was in the late 1940s, and Sir Clutha Mackenzie from New Zealand actually was the first president, if I recall rightly. So we actually, if we're taking any kind of collaboration and international promotion of Braille production and teaching seriously, then we do need to see the World Braille Council continue. So thank you very much for the conversation. Do we have any further questions about this? All right. Oh, one more, another question. Canada, fine.
Darlene Bogart, Canada. I was on one of those aborted World Braille Council attempts. Good people, good ideas, and no resources. And I'm wondering if this becomes a standing committee of the World Blind Union. Does that automatically mean that resources will be allocated to it?
Who knows? Yes, we have Australia. I think Bill Jolly again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the response from Pete Osborne, and I am a supporter of the World Braille Council, and I think that some formalisation in the WBU constitution would be a good idea. I think one of the things that concerned WBU previously was the idea that the World Braille Council would have its own constitution, and therefore the officers wouldn't have as much control over the World Braille Council as they would like to have. But putting something into the constitution, I think, meets that concern. As to the issue of resources, I wouldn't think that formalising the World Braille Council would ensure that there were resources available for it, but we can only hope.
Thanks very much. Any further comments about the World Braille Council? All right. Thank you very much, everyone. I think we're just automatically accepting the various reports that are coming through. I'm not going to formally move their acceptance and adoption. And what we're seeing is that there is an amount of conversation about each report. I want to thank Judy very much for her two reports on World Braille usage. All the transcribers are so looking forward to that, and also, of course, her report on the World Braille Council and the contributions that everyone has made. Now I'd like to move on to two items from Pete Osborne. The first item relates to Braille 21. Probably it's my fault. We only have a verbal report from Pete about this, and I guess I didn't chase you for a written one. We really look forward to taking your verbal report about Braille 21, and then after that we'll get you to move on to your resolutions report, Pete. Public relations report.
Thank you. I actually have relatively little to say about Braille 21. I actually have very little to say about Braille 21, other than to recognise that I think it was, as an event, certainly it was a global event in every sense. It was developed to promote Braille in the 21st century, and we had a whole range of presentations which did that. It was agreed as an event through the World Braille Council and supported by the World Blind Union in that context. And we gathered people from all over the world in the lovely town of Leipzig in Germany, as well as actually discussing and hearing a wide range of presentations, everything from the future of refreshable Braille through to issues concerning education and teaching of Braille, discussion of Braille and math and music, etc. We also had a great time. I think it's a beautiful place to hold a conference. I have to pay tribute to our colleagues in Germany, who I believe are conference hosts in a supreme sense, possibly running close to the conference organisers here. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. And I think the event itself, you know, really did showcase Braille in a very positive manner. The proceedings are now available. Braille21.net as a website is still available, and they're also available to order from the library in Germany. And I think probably through the executive list, we should circulate information about that so that people can get it. But for those of us who are listening online, Braille21.net is still live and has a lot of information there about the Congress, including most of the papers. Some of the papers are also being published in The Educator, which is the International Council on the Education of Visually Impaired People's publication. And indeed, some others are likely to be made available through other professional journals as well. The World Blind Union asked for a closing statement from Braille 21, and we didn't have an opportunity to agree this at the time. The programme was so packed full of presentations we didn't have an opportunity to discuss a statement, but the organisers have subsequently prepared a statement which, as we speak, is being discussed by the executive of the World Blind Union and will be released in due course. But the purpose of the statement is to emphasise the importance of Braille and the need to continually highlight Braille as a means of accessing information by touch. So I think that's probably all I would want to say about Braille 21 at this stage.
Any questions for Pete about Braille 21? Bill Poole?
This is Bill Poole, UK. I'm very pleased to hear that the proceedings are now available, and I note what you've said about the preparation of a closing statement. But I should point out a report was written on the proceedings of the Leipzig conference. I wrote it, and it was published in the British journal Format Matters. I can't remember which month it appeared in. It's only about 12 or 13 hundred words long, and I could have written a lot more because there was so much to talk about. But I twisted the arm of the editor, who very generously gave more than the amount of space that she normally allows to people. If anyone wants to read that, they certainly have my, or indeed to reproduce it, they certainly have my permission to do that, and they would have to get the permission of the editor of the magazine, who is Ruth Frampton at RNIB, and I suspect she would give it too. So if you want a report on that scale, there is one, and it could have been made available to this conference if people had asked for it to be done.
And Mike Townsend?
I also wrote a report for the British Computer Association of the Blind I suppose technically minded folk would find it interesting, but there are some other general matters in it, and I could send that to the list if people would be interested in it.
Yes, please. Now, format matters is put out by UCAF, question?
Yes.
So UCAF is the UK Association for Accessible Formats, and ucaf.org.uk is their website, and I'm sure you can request it through there. Mike, if you can send your report to the executive list, please. The executive will be able to distribute it. And Phyllis from Canada.
I thought it was on before. Apologies. I just want to recommend the proceedings. Darlene and I have shared the purchase of the print proceedings from London, and reading through them and finding them absolutely terrific, really eye-opening.
Thank you, Phyllis. Any more comments about Braille 21? Okay. Well, we'll move on to Pete's Public Relations Officer's report, which is about the outcomes of the ICEB 4th General Assembly 2008 resolutions. Pete, do you want to take us through that, please?
Yes, thank you. I'll do that. This is quite a substantial report, running to nearly 30 Braille pages, for those of you that are listening on the net. I don't propose to go through every aspect of the report, not least because some elements are covered very well in other reports to the Assembly, but I think it is worth touching on some aspects. What I propose to do is comment on some of the resolutions and then see if you have any questions that you want to raise. I'm conscious that we have limited time, so I don't want to take too long going through a report that you all have. So this report has been prepared by me, Pete Osborne, on behalf of the Executive of the International Council on English Braille. And the report briefly covers activities between 2008 and 2012. As Mary's already mentioned in her President's report, there's been considerable progress made on the majority of the resolutions. But I do think that future General Assemblies need to give careful consideration to framing resolutions which are achievable. Absolutely achievable, and certainly in my capacity as chair of the resolutions committee, I hope to be helping us to do that. I think some of the resolutions that we have from the previous assembly may have been quite difficult for us to interpret, quite wide reaching, and given the meagre resources that we have available to us, I think it's quite difficult for us to have achieved. I think there are 14 substantive resolutions, and then obviously votes of thanks. So that's quite a lot of work that's being put in front of the executive, and I would ask us to consider that as we move forward with resolutions. The first resolution is around tactile graphics, and the resolution proposed that we would establish a committee and undertake some work. Although the executive established a committee, it has not really functioned. I should say, for those online, if you want to look at the resolutions that were agreed in 2008, they are on the ICEB website, and you can see them there. So I'm focusing on the commentary rather than the resolutions. However, member countries have been closely cooperating to bring about comprehensive tactile graphic guidelines. To be published by the Braille Authority of North America. And I think these guidelines have now been published.
Yes,
the guidelines have now been published. They really are a terrific effort, and I think everybody that's been involved in those guidelines should be congratulated for what is a monumental undertaking. I would particularly like to recognise colleagues in Canada and also in the USA, who were joined by experts from other countries, and I think the guidelines that have been developed stand a very good chance of becoming internationally recognised guidelines. This is a great example of cooperation at a global level to bring about a significant piece of work representing, I would no doubt, thousands of hours of dedicated effort from those people that are involved. So although we didn't establish a committee, we did actually take part as countries in the work that was undertaken by Canada and also by the Braille Authority of North America. And the result has been, I think, some exceptionally good tactile graphics. Does anybody have any comment on that resolution before I move on? No? The next resolution is focused around Braille music. And we have a report from the Braille Music Committee, so I don't plan to cover this in substantive detail because we'll obviously get to that under the report. But they're on sharing information and providing advice to enable continued development of the UEB rulebook and its implications for music. I think this is one of the charges that in reality was too ambitious for the committee. There are a number of points under the resolution here which really for this committee were quite difficult to achieve. I know I chaired it for a while, so it was quite a challenging job to make this all work. And I think we need to work out what we want to take forward from the existing resolution and indeed the recommendations from the Braille Music Report. What we want to take forward into future resolutions. The Braille 21 Congress received a substantial number of abstracts concerning the development and use of Braille music, and you could almost allow for a specific stream within that Congress that focused on Braille music. So it's obviously of great importance to a number of countries and a number of delegates. Work continues to propose revisions to the international code thanks to an active committee in North America. And I was recently at the Braille Authority of North America meeting where a report on this activity was received. And I think we need to continue to internationalise that work so that we have substantial revisions agreed to what is a very strong basis for an international code. Given that we have a Braille Music Report later on the agenda, I don't plan to say more about that resolution. Does anybody have any observations? No?
We'll pick that up tomorrow.
Okay, so moving on to Resolution 3, which is liaison with the DAISY Consortium, Digital Accessible Information Systems Consortium. And I should say here that I bring greetings from the president of the DAISY Consortium, Stephen King, who's a director at RNIB, as well as the president of the DAISY Consortium. He wishes us well for our meeting and looks forward to continued cooperation between ICEB and the DAISY Consortium. It was envisaged that the ICEB president would also be a member of the DAISY Consortium board and would be best placed to carry forward the implementation of this particular resolution. This proved not to be the case. The DAISY Consortium agreed to continue the development of authoring and interchange elements of the standard, including improving support for Braille transcription. I've been acting as the co-chair of a working group which has delivered key requirements to the consortium around the development of Braille. When I say co-chair, I've had an exceptionally light touch due to other pressures on my time, but the group has been doing extremely good work. And another committee that I chair within the DAISY Consortium, which is its technical advisory committee, is very conscious of the need to develop better support within the DAISY standard for publishing in Braille. The consortium has agreed to support a project to investigate the future development of refreshable Braille, and I'll be talking more about that on this agenda, but that's an exciting project which I think will yield considerable benefits for all of us. I think it's important that we continue to foster good relations with the consortium, that we continue to work together, and that we actually try to increase the profile of Braille within digital publishing. I am very concerned that, and we'll talk more about this on the agenda, I'm very concerned that those of us who choose or need to read by touch are being left behind in the e-book revolution. because of the cost of devices and because of all kinds of issues that we'll talk about. And I think in cooperation with the consortium, we can do more about that together as a global level. So I'm hinting at a resolution that someone might choose to develop. Okay, anything else on the DAISY Consortium from anybody?
Only to comment, Pete, that there's a paper coming from Leona Holloway later this week, Rapid Braille, which absolutely addresses XML to DAISY and Braille transcription. So we'll be coming back to this issue technically later in the week.
Great. Okay, so moving on to Resolution 4, which is around refreshable Braille. And we've had a committee, as has already been mentioned, in this area. The committee's been exchanging information and ideas, which has been instrumental in the establishment of refreshable Braille as a key issue for the WBU World Braille Council and the creation of a DAISY Consortium project, which I've already mentioned in this area. So I think the work that's been, the discussion that's been going on that committee is absolutely key to some of the developments that we're now seeing. We have some substantial discussion on the agenda about refreshable Braille, so I don't propose to say any more about that at this stage.
Keep going.
Okay, so moving on to item 5, resolution 5, I should say. Support for UEB in Braille device. I think this is one of those resolutions that actually could have been very difficult for us to influence, and I think it's a testament to the efforts of many of us individually and collectively that actually many Braille devices now have support for UEB, although this has not been widely communicated, leading to unfounded concern from people who feel that these devices will not support UEB once it's adopted in whatever country. I confess I was one of those people that didn't realise, and I should do, I didn't realise how widespread the implementation of UEB in refreshable Braille devices now is. And I think it's something about. And we'll hear on this agenda about the support in the Apple devices, and obviously through the discussion of the refreshable Braille project, etc., we'll be talking about other devices. Resolution 6, UEB workshops in other countries. I think we have put some considerable effort into this. We continue to raise awareness of UEB throughout the world, noting the President's attendance of the Africa Forum in Ghana and continued support offered to other countries from South Africa and Nigeria, etc. We've already heard in the President's report that this is yielding some results. And I think we can be justly proud of our outreach efforts so far. I've certainly had some discussions with India, who continue to develop their authority, and I'm actively involved in discussions in China, particularly with China Braille Press and representatives of the British Council, who are very keen to consider the future of Braille, English Braille produced in China. I was quite surprised just how much Braille, English Braille, is produced in China. It's a very significant part of the output of key producers in China. So I think we're continuing to grow awareness and knowledge of UEB, and this is obviously something that we need to continue throughout the world. Several countries have received training in UEB, provided from Australia, and UEB has been promoted as part of ICEBI Education for All campaign, which is reaching many countries throughout the world. So some really great activity happening here, I think. Moving on to Resolution 7, Braille outreach in other countries.
Bill Jolly from Australia. I'd just like to make a comment in relation to Resolution 6. In 2006, we had a UEB-specific resolution passed at the General Assembly of the ICEVI, the ICEBI hasn't met as a General Assembly since 2006 because unfortunately they had to cancel their planned one some years ago because of some problems, in political problems, I think, in Thailand. The General Assembly will be this year, and I'm just flagging that perhaps we need another... We need a resolution from here to go forward to ICEBI, or from the ICEB to go forward to ICEBI and perhaps WEBU, but particularly ICEBI later this year, to heighten the profile of UEB within that organisation.
Thank you, Bill. I think that's absolutely right, and also germane to the discussion of Resolution 7, which is all about Braille outreach in other countries, and particularly noting the campaign, the joint WBU and ICVI campaign, the Education for All, which is reaching many children and educators in a wide variety of countries. But I guess I'm not entirely sure how much of the link is there, if you like, between what's happening in that campaign and what's happening within ICEBI. In ICEB, I think some of it is more by accident than design, and I agree we probably need to revisit that point. Moving on to Resolution 8, which is about gathering information on UEB implementation. I think insufficient progress has been made around this resolution, and Mary touched on this in her report. RNIB prepared and shared a, quote, State of the Nations report concerning the implementation of UEB. This is something we're very happy to make available to anybody who has not seen it. But I think there is a lot more work that we could do in this area. I don't think we made sufficient progress on this resolution. I don't know whether anybody has any additional observation they wish to make, but certainly when I was trying to pull information together for this report, I did feel this was a bit of a gap in terms of what we've been able to deliver. Any observations, or do we agree? Okay. Resolution 9, UEB training and implementation materials. I would like to pay tribute, as Mary has already, to Jean Obi for the work that she's done in this area. Although we made little progress in the first instance, the last year has been, we've put on a bit of a spurt, as we might say in English, and lots has been done, I think, to move this forward. And I think we're actually getting ourselves to the place now where we have format guidelines, which we'll be talking about on this agenda, particular guidelines for smaller producers, etc. And I think we are providing information in a way that will be helpful to many organisations, particularly in a wide cross-section of countries throughout the world. Resolution 10, which is all around signage and labelling, although we've not necessarily had an effective committee in this area, a lot has been going on. And we're now involved in a range of activities. I'm involved now in an International Standards Organisation Committee, TC173, with some horrible acronym afterwards that I can't remember, which is all focused around Braille signage and labelling, particularly signage in public places. And I think one of the challenges we have in this area is that there's potentially so much standards development going on that actually it's quite hard to keep up. There's standards development at a European level, there's global standards stuff happening. We have our respective committees inside our organisations that will be looking into these issues and actually coordinating all of this so that there is a consistent approach to signage and labelling, I think is a trick that has escaped us so far. So we might want to consider whether that is a realistic thing for us to try and achieve in future resolutions. Uh, Resolution 11. UB completion and maintenance. And we have a lot on this on our agenda, but I think it's clear to all of us that we've moved a great distance with regard to this resolution. The committee's worked hard to complete outstanding tasks, and I almost forgot this myself when I was thinking about, you know, the work that had to be put in to get us to a stage where we have a strong basis for maintenance. You know, a lot of work has been done at the maintenance committee, which has been fantastically chaired by Phyllis Landon, in my view, is now established as a great means of continually maintaining this code that we now have, the UEB we now have. So I think it's a fantastic achievement that we have here, and we should be proud of the transition that we're managing to effect, and the way in which we've moved UEB into a maintenance phase. And there's plenty more on the agenda about that. Resolution 12, international exchange of Braille materials. Again, I think this is a resolution that's kind of been happening around us. You know, we're aware of what's going on, but the resolution has been achieved through the WBU campaign to obtain a treaty on copyright, this, and also through work with the Universal Postal Union. And both of these campaigns are still very active. We do need to continue to work to make sure that we have the postal, that we maintain the postal concessions, the free post concessions that we have. That's something that has to be continually monitored, and my colleague Dan Pescott at RNIB has done some excellent work in this area. Working with the Universal Postal Union, along with people like Lord Colin Lowe, etc., from RNIB. The treaty, I think, still stands a good chance of delivering. Obviously, there's strong resistance to a treaty of any nature, I think, from publishers, but progress towards a global treaty is progressing very well with the World Intellectual Property Organization. It's undeniable that there have been some recent setbacks in discussions, as people argue about whether there should be an instrument or you know, what the text should be and all that kind of thing. But I think we need to keep in mind that treaties can take, you know, decades to deliver, and we haven't been at this game particularly long. So we are achieving quite a lot in a relatively short space of time, I think. Any observations on that?
Just to draw attention to the fact that the president of the World Blind Union, Marianne Diamond, has prepared a report about this, which has been made available to the Roundtable on Information Access for People with Print Disabilities. She delivered that report last weekend, and that'll be up on the Roundtable website, so we can provide a link to that for you. As soon as it becomes available. But I think we have another comment or question. Bill Poole.
Yeah, Bill Poole, UK. Yes, I wasn't quite clear, Pete, whether your which of your remarks applied to work on the UPU treaty and which applied to the copyright treaty. I was interested in the copyright treaty in particular because it seemed to me, when I last looked at how progress was going, that the issue of enforceability was one of the stumbling blocks in reaching agreement. Where have we got to with regard to that now? I mean, is it just that there's a lot of intensive discussion, but it isn't possible to predict what the ultimate outcome would be, or have you got anything more positive to say?
I think that's a fair summary, Bill. There's lots of intensive discussion. I think the key stage at the moment is lobbying of specific states who maybe are not as positive as we'd like them to be. he says, trying to pick his words carefully. So, you know, we are making sure that we work with specific states to understand what their issues might be and to convince them of the WBU position. So I think the current stage is very hard direct lobbying with specific states ahead of the next World Intellectual Property Organization meetings this year. Okay. Any more?
Yep.
Okay, so 13, which is about the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities.
I have a question on 12.
Oh, do you have a question on 12? Please go for it.
Yes. There seems to be... there seems to be a difference of view between the European Parliament, which I think is made up of representatives from different countries in a parliament, and the European Commission, which is sort of the bureaucracy of the European Union. Can you throw a little bit more light on that, and are you able to indicate which way that those sort of dichotomy or those differences of view tend to where they tend to end? The Parliament has passed a resolution supporting the treaty. Yes. So, for the benefit of people that don't know, and there seems to be some resistance from the bureaucracy. Can you clarify that, please?
Thanks very much for that, Bill. Okay, so I think the current position is that ultimately it's member states within Europe who need to understand the position and need to support. Specific member states have particular difficulties with this. There was a recent brief which was produced by Dan Pescott, who's campaigns manager at RNOB, and I think probably the most succinct way of answering your question would be to make that available. Not least, I don't want to say anything that's not in that brief, because I think it's important that negotiations are ongoing, and we need to await the outcome of negotiations with specific member states. But certainly within the European context, it's very important that member states understand the position we're trying to adopt and are able to support that.
Thanks, Pete. Bill Poole has another comment.
Bill Poole, UK. Of how much needs to be changed in the European Union, it needs to change its constitution so as to radically alter the balance of power between the Parliament and the Commission. The Commission has too much power, and as long as that's the case, you're going to have difficulties in all sorts of areas that aren't anything to do with this conference, as well as ones which are. But anyway, it's nice to know that the Parliament supported the treaty.
All right. Shall we move on to Resolution 13 about the United Nations Convention?
Sorry,
no, we haven't. Canada. Sorry.
Hi, it's Betty Noble from Canada. I'm not sure exactly where this fits in, but I'm hoping Pete might be able to make a comment about it. And it sort of comes from me using a Braille display with my iPad and noticing that, you know, there's some incorrect Braille while I'm reading an iBook. And I'm wondering if there's been any sort of discussion around standardization of the production of electronic Braille. Mm.
Oh, my goodness.
In world peace, too.
Yeah. Yes, I think for the benefit of those who didn't hear that, that ranks along trying to achieve world peace or something. I think it's an ideal position that we'd like to reach, but I think certainly at a global level that we haven't done a great deal with that. We might return to that, he says, putting Judy on the spot. Under the paper to do with access to iOS devices, because I think that's something that will increasingly be an issue, particularly as mainstream reading devices look to implement Braille support. So I do think it's an issue we'll have to return to. Shall I take us on to 13?
Yes.
Okay. This is all about the convention. ICB has not formally addressed the convention. However, all of its work directly promotes literacy through Braille, and at national level, its members have pursued several country-specific initiatives to support the convention. I personally think this is an area that is not well enough understood by us as a whole. There are some very good provisions in the convention around access to literacy, access to literature, and there are even some references to Braille from memory. And I think this is something that really we ought to consider, particularly as countries. It's the second fastest adopted convention, next to the one on rights of the child, and it has a huge amount of support. And countries are now beginning to submit their reports, and there's a requirement for them to have shadow commentary reports done, and many countries are beginning to work on that. I think that there's some excellent resources through the WBU. It has produced a toolkit for the implementation of the convention, and I think at some point it might be worth us looking at that toolkit to see how we can support our members to address the issues of the convention and support implementation, particularly with regard to access to information. So I do think this is an area where potential future resolution might emerge. 13?
Mike Townsend.
You took the words out of my mouth, Peter. A future resolution to carry this one forward.
Yeah.
Because I believe that the UN Convention is an extremely important opportunity for us, and we must really make sure that during our next period we grasp that opportunity and promote Braille through this means and others.
Bill Poole.
Bill Poole, UK. Yes, well, of course I agree with that, but I think what you have to be careful to do, I mean, Pete was right when he said it takes a long time for these conventions to get agreed and ratified and implemented. What I think you must do is concentrate on implementing the convention as it stands and not try to amend the convention to make it say more than it does say. In order to, I mean, there are other routes to getting improved access to information without doing that, it seems to me. I think you should implement it to the hilt, yes, but don't, as I would see it, waste time, which would involve years of negotiation in trying to get the convention to say what you would rather it had said, as opposed to what it does say. That would be the only advice I would give to you. Otherwise, I would agree with what Mike has said.
Nigeria, and then Mike Townsend. Mike Townsend.
It was just an additional comment to what Bill said. I think there's ample opportunity in the convention as it is, and we should use the tool that we've got.
And I'd like to make a comment about this. As someone who's had to do some work for on behalf of the Human Rights Commission in New Zealand, I've had to read that convention quite thoroughly from end to end and backwards. And it's an amazing document. In just about everything you can think of in your daily life that drives you to distraction is covered off in the convention. It's a thoughtful, considerate document. And it is, although, yes, it's in English, there are, of course, other language iterations of the convention, but its English is not complex. It's fairly easy to work your way through it, and it speaks to just about all of us and almost everything we do. But certainly, from the point of view of Braille, the word Braille comes up a number of times in the convention. And so, I do encourage you, if you haven't had the opportunity to read it, just sit down and have a good look at it, because there are some very good words available there to help you. And now Fred Schroeder.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm mindful of the time, but I participated in many of the meetings at the UN that, as it was considering the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. And I just want to make a point. There was a great deal of resistance to addressing any specific disability group. There was a strong sense that the document should speak to the needs of people with disabilities generally. And the upshot of that was that there was great resistance to using the word Braille. They were fine with more general language about literacy and access to information. But the two people that really persisted and were successful in getting the convention are Kiki Nordstrom, who was WBU president at the time, and Monthean Buntan from Thailand, who was one of the delegates to the convention. The references that are there were very hard won, and I think speak to the need for collective action globally as a community of blind people.
Thank you, Fred. And I think we'd better move to the last resolution.
Yep. And just prior to doing that, I'd encourage you also to look at the toolkit, which is on the World Blind Union's website, which is packed full of information about the convention and implementation. The final one that we'll touch on is Braille promotion. I think the bicentenary, the Braille bicentenary, saw a spike in promotion, if you like, for many countries. In some cases, there was additional spend and additional focus, and Braille became a real talking point in many countries. I know certainly in the UK, you know, we achieved some very successful events, as did many other countries. In the US, we saw the minting of coin. We saw the same in India. Stamps, you name it, people tried it. Braille on the beach, I think, was tried. Braille on windows, you know, all sorts of really innovative ideas. And the sadness for me is that we've not been able to sustain some of that, mainly due to the economic downturn for some organisations and the fact that spend has not been, it's been difficult to maintain spend. But there is also, I think, a fundamental problem with the model in many senses of Braille provision, and that is that we spend infinitely more brain cells and money talking about code and production and actually achieving production than we ever do on promoting and teaching Braille. And that's a global problem, I think, which will probably warrant further discussion. For many organisations, the vast majority of resource actually is spent producing Braille. But we need to be careful because, you know, the dynamics of how Braille is being used continues to change. And certainly in some countries, you know, there is a significant decline in how if I say traditional Braille services, I mean libraries, etc., are being used. There is a significant decline in some countries. So I think we have some very significant challenges ahead of us in terms of Braille promotion. I sit here before you as the public relations officer, and I will say that I haven't been as successful as I would like to be promoting Braille at an international level. And I think one of the reasons for that is we need to fully understand what is possible at an international level as opposed to a national level. What can be achieved at a global or even between a group of countries level that is different or possible from the national level, and that's still something that we wrestle with, I think, and something we need to understand more clearly. So clearly for me there is a need for future resolutions about Braille promotion, but I think they need to be very targeted, and we need to agree what it is we want to try and achieve at the international level. Any comments on that?
Okay, thank you very much, Pete.
That concludes my report.
Yes, thank you very much for your very comprehensive report on those resolutions. It's much appreciated. And we're coming up to lunch, and there are two things we need to do. I need to remind delegations that I'd like the names of the people that you want to remember tomorrow morning so I can plan time. And the next thing to do is to ask, can we have the lunch menu read, please? And it's right here and it's about to be read, so all ears.
Right, there's rice, vegetable pasta, roast chicken, beef stew, sweet potato, baby roast potatoes, gravy, baked fish in sauce, and a selection of salads.
Yum. I'm sure the international listeners would, yes, like to not have to be cooking right now. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for your very respectful attention this morning. We've had some very interesting things. I will call you all back, please. Let's try and resume by 1:30 if we can, because the country reports this afternoon are fascinating, and we want to allow the full respectful time for each country. So if we can try and be back by 1:30, that would be most appreciated. Thank you very much, everyone.
With the time at 12:15, we are going to log off until 1:30. We will probably be back by 1:25. And I would like to welcome everybody and thank everybody for listening thus far. Remember that you can follow us at ICEB2012 on Twitter. And please try. Right, so in about 1 hour and 15 minutes, we will return. Thanks for listening.